This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. You know what the problem is? Maybe other people don't have this problem. There's too much stuff to watch and listen to. You know, I can't keep up with everything that you need to read or that you need to watch or that you need to listen to in terms of television, in terms of movies, in terms of podcasts, in terms of documentaries, in terms of news articles, in order to be an informed person. There's just too much. So one of the things that I have not gotten around to listening to yet was Tucker Carlson's appearance on Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan, if you're not familiar with him, he hosts one of the I think it's fair to say, maybe even the most popular podcast in America. And he had on Tucker Carlson, who I am a fan of and who I try to catch when I can. But again, you know, I'll get an email showcasing this guest that he has and that. I just don't have time to listen to it. You know, I have maybe 40 minutes in the car driving home, maybe an hour driving in. And that's basically, if I'm not listening to live radio, which honestly is most of the time, that's the time that I have to catch up on some of this stuff. So I miss a lot of this stuff. So I've not heard this Joe Rogan interview with Tucker Carlson yet, but I've read several of the articles about newsworthy things that the two of them said. Tucker Carlson, whatever you think about him, whether you love him or hate him, he has made his entire career over the last 30 years pretty much on television. He's done other things. He's, you know, done some print work, written a book. Now he's in the digital space. And he's known for being on television. Like me being a radio guy. I've done other things, but I'm primarily known as a radio person. Do you know that? So he was formerly a TV guy. Now he's an internet guy. Do you know that he doesn't use either? He doesn't use the internet. He doesn't watch television. While appearing as a guest on the latest episode of the Joe Rogan Experience, Tucker Carlson was attempting to send Rogan a series of files mistakenly released by the U.S. government. When the popular podcast host told him to email the files, Tucker had a pretty interesting response, basically that he wouldn't be doing any such thing.
I'm going to send this to Homeland Security. Just release this.
Send it to me. I'll send it to Jamie.
And no, I got it right here. I'll just I don't do email or whatever. I don't know how to airdrop anything.
You don't do email?
No. I haven't done email in many years.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you exist?
I do text.
Wow. Just text?
Yeah. I don't do email. I don't go on the f-ing internet. I don't have a TV. I'm not into that. But anyway, no, that stuff is bad, you know?
Yeah, I guess.
That's my isolation tank.
And then he goes on to say, I just stay away from that blank. I knew he didn't do social media or go on Twitter or Facebook and stuff. I'm a little shocked. No television, no email, no internet. I don't consider myself hooked on smartphones and things like that. I am absolutely hooked on email. I have a difficult time imagining my day without email because I rely on email for so much. I rely on email to book guests, to communicate with people about the show, communicate with our staff here. Can you pull this audio cut? The clip that we just played for you, I emailed that to our staff here asking them to do it. I can't imagine going a day. Well, look, I can do a day because I was trying and have been trying to not use any electronics on Saturday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. And for the most part, I do. But I can't imagine going a week without email because I also use it as a news source. I subscribe to all these newsletters and I get all the news. Basically, that's my way of reading the paper through email during the week anyway. And then to not use the internet, I think if I'm tempted to try that. I'm tempted to try a week of no internet, no television, no email. Because I wonder if maybe that would make me a better adjusted person. Maybe that would make me, I don't know, would help with my attention span or something along those lines. Tucker also doesn't drink anymore. I wonder if there's some correlation to that. I know Tucker used to email because Tucker and I used to email once in a while. This is going back years. But I had tried to email him a couple of times at a couple of the addresses that I had for him over the years. And I got no response. And sometimes it basically came back that this person doesn't have this email anymore. And maybe that's why. So I do think that there is truth to that, that he doesn't email. But it got me wondering, how many folks out there don't do all the three of those things? Now, he does say he texts. Now, I have to think that if you're that reliant on text messaging, that you're probably sending long text messages, which I hate. I just can't stand it. I think if it's longer than 140 characters or 180 characters, maybe, it's got to be in an email. Other than that, if it's shorter than 180 characters, by all means, text it. Other than that, email. Tom Selleck, who, by the way, it's interesting. I mentioned, I think it was last week or the week before, that he was the original choice to play Indiana Jones before Harrison Ford. That was a clue on Jeopardy, not last night, but the previous night. It's just synchronicity. That stuff always happens to me. Tom Selleck revealed in an interview with People magazine that he has never sent a text message or an email. Never. And he doesn't use the internet. So this is a whole different world to me, and I'm wondering if there would be any value to me eschewing email for a week and seeing what this show would sound like. I don't know. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. But it got me wondering, honestly, how many of you don't email, don't use the internet, and don't watch television. All three. Because I think that is, it's a different world. It's a world I honestly can't imagine. 800-848-9222. JR is in Brooklyn. Hello, JR.
Hey, good morning, Frank. Listen, morning. Tucker Carlson is a very famous person. We all know that. I'm not trying to take away from your fame, but Tucker Carlson probably has a staff of people who take care of this for him. They hand him a folder before every show, or they give him some type of bullet points before every show. That's why he has the ease of not having to do this, is because he probably has a large staff of people who do it for him.
Well, that's interesting. You know, first of all, I am the 44th most important talk show host in this country.
And
I'll just mention
that. I am not taking any shine away from you, Frank. I am happily a participant in giving you that fame.
I'm busting chops. You know, that's interesting. I don't know how large his staff is, but I know there's at least three or four people that work on the content side of it. So you're right. Maybe the part of the reason he doesn't need to go on the internet is because he can tell folks what he's looking for and they can just find him either, whether it's information about a guest or a news story. And I really don't have that luxury. That's interesting.
Right. He doesn't get his electric bill. He doesn't get a courtesy call from the electric company via email. You know, you do. You get a notification, hey, your cell phone bill is due. He doesn't get that.
Yeah, it's an interesting, you know, that's an interesting point. So it probably you think is not worth my while trying to go email-less, no. internet-less, and TV-less for a week.
No, I think it would. No, it's you're Frank. You have, again, I don't, you're a personable person. You're a regular person in the terms of your day-to-day life.
Yeah, well, that's for sure.
He's not. He has a staff.
All right.
Your staff may sometimes consist of someone to watch your child in a bind, and it costs too much money to do that.
That's true. JR, it's a good point. Thank you. I feel a little bit better after hearing from you. Thank you. And, you know, I don't watch a lot of television, but I try to catch what I can. I watch the Mets. I can't believe they've now lost three straight, but, I do try to catch Smirkanish on Saturday, although with Carmine swimming lessons, I only usually catch the first half of it. But, there's a lot of good shows out there that I wish I had time to check out. 800-848-9222. But I'm curious if there's any of you that are in the same boat, that no internet, no television, and no email. Honestly, can't imagine life without email at this point. And I'm not being hyperbolic at all. I can imagine life without television. I'm a radio guy. But no internet and no email, that's tough. That really is tough. I can't imagine that. 800-848-9222. But maybe he's better off for it. Larry on Long Island, hello.
Hey, Frank. I'm one of those people. I describe myself to people at times as being prehistoric. Technologically speaking, I'm in the 1800s. I've never emailed. I've never texted. I don't have a computer. I have my little phone where I can Google things, and I'm okay with it. Once in a while, something comes up where I'm inconvenienced, but it doesn't happen very, very often. But yeah, I'm one of those prehistoric human beings.
And you don't miss it.
Don't miss it at all. Don't miss it. Mm-hmm. Especially with all of the problems, people going into other people's private stuff and stealing things. And I don't need the headaches. I'm 70 years old now. I'm retired for over 10 years. And, don't miss it at all.
You know,
not at all.
You do save yourself a lot of aggravation. I mean, it's one of the reasons Donald Trump doesn't email. It's one of the reasons Ron DeSantis doesn't email. There are all sorts of tricky things that you avoid if you totally eschew email. I just don't think that I could do it. Larry, thank you. You know, it's funny. Curtis, actually, I don't want to get too into our interpersonal dealings, but Curtis advised me maybe a month ago, just don't email. Don't email anybody. You save yourself a lot of trouble. And I thought it was such an interesting thing to say that was his solution to the difficulty that I was dealing with, was to just say, stop emailing, because there is a certain logic to it. But I think I have to email at least a little bit. I just the story ideas alone that I get from email are enormous. And again, it's like I don't have to go out and buy 20 different newspapers. I get the best of the best from all over the country emailed to me each day. So I can't imagine it. But Larry says he does it. No, I forgot to ask him about television. But he says he does no email, no internet. Do you do no email, no internet, no television like Tucker Carlson does?
I'm going to send this to Homeland Security. Just release this.
Send it to me. I'll send it to Jamie.
And no, I got it right here. I'll just I don't do email or whatever. I don't know how to airdrop anything.
You don't do email?
No. I haven't done email in many years.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you exist?
I do text.
Wow. Just text?
Yeah, I don't do email. I don't go on the f-ing internet. I don't have a TV. I'm not into that. But anyway. No, that stuff is bad, you know?
Yeah, I guess.
That's my isolation tank.
Isolation tank. Well, I mean, I think he is at least acknowledging that it makes him a bit more of a recluse than it otherwise would if he used email the way the rest of the world did. 800-848-9222. I do think there's something cool about it, but not something I'm
willing to try.
Frank, did you hear how there's a guy in the background as Tucker's trying to do it, like telling him, like, oh, I'll do it, like, kind of like, I'll do it for you.
Well, he's saying, no, I got it. Yeah, he's saying airdrop it.
Yeah, yeah, and he doesn't know how to do that.
Yeah, he said he doesn't airdrop.
I honestly, when I hear people like that, that don't do email, or they go, I don't have a computer, you know, no offense to Larry, but to me, it's just obnoxious. It's like, you know, we're in 2024.
It is a little annoying.
How do you, you're better than I am. I'm better than you because I don't email. I don't have a computer. I'm old school. No, you're just old and outdated. I mean, give me a break. You want to fax something?
I can understand not wanting a mobile phone or a smartphone. I get that.
Smartphone.
Okay.
I get that.
But not emailing, it really is inconvenient. You know what I notice how inconvenient it is? Once in a while, people will call the show, sometimes even guests, and they'll ask for something. And I'll say, email it to me. Email me what you need, and I'll send it to you. And they'll say, I don't have email. It is annoying. Because you know what? In that instance, you're making everyone else's life a bit more inconvenient.
And I get that all the time when you'll say, get the person's information, and they don't have an email address. And I go, well, what do you expect us to do? You don't have an email address. Or I don't have a cell phone. I don't have an email address. What world are you living in? I just don't understand it. To me, like you just said, it is very inconvenient. And they look at you and their attitude to you is like, you're the one who's crazy. I'm the one, I don't have an email. I live just fine without email. But like you just said, it does inconvenience everyone else around them.
But you know, like Tom Selleck doesn't text and doesn't email. And they asked him, you know, how do you stay in touch with people? His wife will send a text message or an email, which is almost kind of the same thing. I don't know if Tucker has like basically somebody that's doing all kinds of that stuff for him. I get that. But what do you make of Tucker? Tucker's not
obnoxious.
Old. You think it's just obnoxious?
Yeah, even the way he's saying it, like, yeah, I don't do that. I haven't done that for years.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm going to send this to you. Homeland Security just released this.
Send it to me. I'll send it to Jamie.
And no, I got it right here. I'll just I don't do email or whatever. I don't know how to airdrop anything.
You don't do email?
No. I haven't done email in many years.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you exist?
I do text.
Wow. Just text?
Yeah, I don't do email.
See, I also find that annoying that he does text but not email, because I hate these long text messages. There's nothing worse than a text message that's the entire length of the phone screen. I hate that. You know, a friend of mine serves on a board that I'm on. I'll spare you the details because it's not relevant here. And I will forward him the emails that I get, reminders of the meeting. And I think that's a very courteous thing that I do, is forward these emails. And last month, he misses our meeting. No big deal. I mean, that we didn't discuss anything super important. But, you know, it's a meeting that we're required to be at. You only get a couple of absences. So he says, I can't believe I missed the last blankety blank meeting. I said, I'm trying to stay on top of sending you reminders. He writes me back. Text me. Don't email me. I barely check emails. And I said, we'll try. He responds, LOL, texting is tough, huh? I said, you know what? It's just when you have your email open, it's just naturally confusing. It's just naturally conducive to forwarding rather than switching to a different format and recreating it. I mean, so I think these people that also don't check their emails, that's a little annoying too. I get that because look, it takes me the whole day to get through my email, right? It's not easy. But I think I agree with you, Matt, and I feel a little bit better about, I was feeling that maybe I should try and email fast, the way I do booze during Lent or something. But after listening to you and listening to JR, I'm not going to do it. Not going to do it. But it's like Larry says, he feels mildly inconvenienced. I'm surprised that we don't have more people that are in the same boat as Tucker Carlson, because I've heard them on this show. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight, straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano. It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Nothing gonna keep me from you. I was talking earlier about how I just learned that Tracy Torme died in January. The son of Mel Torme and the great writer for Saturday Night Live, for Star Trek The Next Generation, and the creator of a terrific TV show called Sliders.
What if you found a portal to a parallel universe? What if you could slide into 1,000 different worlds where it's the same year and you're the same person, but everything else is different? And what if you can't find your way home?
Really an interesting premise. It was almost like Lost in Space, but for parallel worlds. Again, you only need to see the first two seasons. The writing after the second season Tracy Torme left or they pushed him out. Fox made it more into an action show. It was just not good after that. But John Rhys-Davies, who has just one of the best voices in the world, is a great actor. He was on the show. And I feel bad. Not that I knew Tracy Torme, but I feel bad that I didn't know that he was dead for 3 months. I lived 3 months of my life thinking he was alive, and he was dead. That ever happened to you? I mean, it was very disconcerting, I must say. All right, 800-848-9222. I want to take this opportunity to mention our listener of the week. This honor is no doubt overdue for this gentleman. This is someone who has been a listener of this show for a long time. He is a prolific social media commenter on this show. I don't think he's ever called in before, which I wish he would do more often, but certainly listens to, I think, the whole show and has no hesitancy about sharing with us where in the world he is listening. I want to name this week's listener of the week, a guy that was listening to us in the middle of nowhere last week, Joel Ryder. Congratulations, Joel Ryder, who I think is actually a doctor. So if you, Dr. Ryder, would like to pick tomorrow's bumper music, you can email me, frank.morano@redappleaudionetworks.com, and send me a few song selections, and we will try to play them. Congratulations to Joel Ryder, this week's Listener of the Week. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Dennis in Illinois. Hi, Dennis.
Hi there. Pretty neat little conversation talking with your call screener there. And I don't watch TV because it's boring. And then I don't really use the internet because it's boring. And then right now where we're living in Illinois, yeah, I got a work cell phone and I got to respond to text messages. But when I retire, we move out to southeastern Ohio. There's no cell phone. There's no internet. And you can get internet if you do the satellite thing, but we're not going to do that. And it took me a little while to get my wife to wean herself off TV and internet. But what I realized is that, like, when you don't have a cell phone and you got to call somebody, you know, like on a landline, with a cell phone, you're looking up somebody's name. You don't know their cell phone number.
Right, that's true.
Or they, yeah. So I started memorizing phone numbers again. But and I was telling your call screener also, it's like when you get in an area like that, it's just like being living back in the 70s or the 80s. I mean, we all survived back then, but it's just like your brain is so much more free.
Yeah, I get that. And that's why I'm wondering if I should try it, because I do think on the day that I go largely without electronics, which is Saturday, I do feel a lot less encumbered. I also feel like I'm missing something. I feel like there's someone trying to get in touch with me and I'm missing out on it. And inevitably what happens is when I turn my phone on at the end of the day, I have missed a whole bunch of things, but that's interesting. Dennis, I'm surprised to hear what you said though about the internet being boring. To me, the internet is the opposite of boring, because with the internet, you can take just about any subject that you're interested in, and you could get, in essence, a whole college education about that subject. You could learn almost anything on the internet, research almost anything on the internet, find video and audio of almost anything on the internet. To me, I think the problem with the internet is that it's just so interesting, quite frankly. You know, one of the things, if you're into history or government or politics, especially, one of the things that you can spend hours on is C-SPAN.org, because they have a video search feature where you can search anything that's ever been on C-SPAN. And it's incredible. Absolutely incredible. You can type a person's name. Let's say, you know, I really like Pat Buchanan. You can go back and watch interviews that Pat has done on C-SPAN going all the way back to 1988. But you could do that with any historical figure that's ever appeared on C-SPAN. And it's just fascinating to watch. Before you know it, you blink and you've spent 4 or 5 hours watching these old videos on C-SPAN. If you're a fan of vintage talk radio, especially talk show hosts that aren't around anymore, people like Gene Shepard, people like Barry Farber, you can go on the YouTube and find so many great clips of these giants. And it's just so wonderful to go back and see a lot of this stuff. So I do find that a little odd. But you know, to each his own. I'll tell you what I didn't like. Do you remember the Blair Witch Project? It came out now, it's hard to believe, but it came out 25 years ago. I saw it in theaters. That was the only time I saw it, 25 years ago. I saw it with my mom, actually. We were in Florida. Her dad, my grandfather, had just passed away, and we were settling some of his affairs in West Palm Beach, where he lived part of the year. And I don't think we had a car, so there was not much to do in the older folks area that we were, you know, that we were staying at. So we ended up going to the movies. We saw a couple of different movies. We went, I think, 2 or 3 days, and it was a lot of fun. But we saw the Blair Witch Project. Now, I like horror movies. My mom loves horror movies, loves it. So I think it's probably her favorite genre. And neither of us like the Blair Witch Project. And, you know, part of it is, I'm sure, a function of hype, that everybody was talking about how great this film was and how scary it was and how different it was and wondering whether it was real or not. And basically, if you're not familiar with the film, it's shot in the style of a documentary. You almost think you're watching a home video of people that try to go and or shoot some sort of a documentary, and then disaster strikes them, and you see a lot of their emotions on the screen and all that kind of thing. Here's a little bit of the Blair Witch Project.
Where is he?
Where are you?
Come on, Josh. I hear him downstairs. Come on! I hear him downstairs! Come on! Josh!
So, there's a lot of that in the picture. So I wasn't crazy about it, but I was in the minority because this was a global phenomenon when it came out back in 1999. Interestingly, it stars Ray Hance, who went by Heather Donahue at the time, Joshua Leonard, who's the person that they're calling for there, Josh, and Michael C. Williams. They use their real names for character names. And most of the dialogue was heavily improvised. They really made that movie a success. So there was also a lot of really creative marketing surrounding the film's, suggestion. They basically implied that these folks had really gone missing, which they had not. They were just actors. So despite the film's very meager budget of $35,000 to $60,000, which did not include marketing or post-production, the buzz surrounding this film earned it $248 million plus at the box office. And this is 25 years ago. $248 million plus. Commercially, dollar for dollar, in terms of budget versus profit, it's one of the most commercially successful films of all time. And by the way, it spawned a whole empire, a whole franchise, sequels, video games, an escape room attraction, and a whole lot more. So you'd think that the stars of that picture, the people running around, acting scared, and making this film and making people think the film was real.
Can we keep going, please?
No, we're going to chill out.
I thought you wanted to get to the car.
Oh, boy! Okay, come on, let's get up here.
You guys weren't lying to me about the map, were you? Because this just seems like you guys are having just a little bit too much fun for my taste.
Oh, Heather, this is going a little stir-crazy. Heather, if you make me yell at this point, I'm going to have to yell at you, man.
Come on, seriously, if you have the map, I just want to know that you have it. That will just make me happy just to know that you have it.
Heather.
If I know that you have it and I can at least see it, I will feel much better.
Like, all we're trying to do is be cool with
you. Well, I find it very cool that I get laughed at because my shoes are wet for the rest of the day. I find that hilarious.
Maybe this movie's better than I remember, but you know what it was? The camera, the weird camera angles made me a little dizzy. But anyway, you'd think that the stars of a movie that made $248 million would be set for life, kind of like the way the stars of Star Wars were set for life or any of those pictures. But I read an article in The Hustle, which is one of the many newsletters that I get by email. I read an article in The Hustle yesterday that they were not. And you'd think they'd be happy about the recent announcement that they're going to relaunch the franchise, which they are, with a new vision. But that's not what happened. Artisan Entertainment bought the distribution rights to the Blair Witch Project for $1.1 million. Lionsgate had acquired the franchise in 2003. So they basically, each actor received $300,000 from a buyout for the first film and nothing else. Nothing else. 300 grand, one time fee, that's it. Having signed contracts when they were essentially kids with no legal or union support. Well, last weekend, the actors published a letter to Lionsgate requesting retroactive and future compensation for the 1999 film, equivalent to what actors union SAG-AFTRA would require, plus consultation on any future projects using their likeness and the creation of a $60,000 grant for indie filmmakers. I have to say, you know, again, maybe it's difficult to shed any tears for people that got paid 300 grand for one movie when they were very young, but I get exactly where they're coming from. The actors point out in their letter that subsequent reboots that they've not been a part of, they've been critical and commercial disappointments. And that's often true of franchises that lose original creators. It's kind of like what I was saying about Sliders before, after Tracy Torme left. After Tracy Torme left, the show went to pot. But more broadly, Hollywood saw two major strikes last year. We covered them extensively, advocating for fair streaming residuals and AI protections. And the actors that wrote this letter, the actors from the Blair Witch Project, they're asking for what union representation would have provided had they not been, in their words, starry-eyed unknowns. It also serves as a cautionary tale for any creator about the importance of protecting their intellectual property, their inventions, and their contributions. For instance, we talked about this when he died, and then we spoke about it again when Noam Layden brought it up. The fella that invented the karaoke machine never patented it. George Romero's Night of the Living Dead entered the public domain due to a titling error, meaning anyone can rip it off, remake it, or distribute it sans royalties. I could go out and sell copies of Night of the Living Dead right now. Maybe I should do that. I wonder about that. Maybe I'll do a Frank Morano's cut of Night of the Living Dead, where I splice some new stuff in there. You know how they did with Raymond Burr in Godzilla, the first Godzilla picture, and then again in Godzilla 1985. Maybe I'll do that. I'll edit someone else into Night of the Living Dead, and I'll call that Frank Morano's cut. That's an idea. I'm going to write that down. The inventor of the troll doll, you remember how big those troll dolls were? Saw a fraction, a minuscule fraction of the toys, $4.5 billion in sales. And Antonio Meucci, who invented the telephone before Alexander Graham Bell did, I don't think he got anything. He lost the patent on that, wasn't able to renew it, and didn't get anything. So you got to be careful. I feel bad for these actors, and I think what they're doing now is good, not only for them, but for future young actors that may find themselves in a similar situation. But, and it does make me want to rewatch this picture again.
Yeehaw! Well, we have shot the first scene, the cemetery scene. The opening is shot. We're doing a documentary.
Yeah.
About the Blair Witch.
Oh.
Oh, have you heard of the Blair Witch?
Oh, yeah. That's an old story. I remember Mr. Parr. It was an old hermit.
Right.
And he lived up on a mountain. He had a place up there. Been there for a long, long time.
There you have it. 800-848-9222. Matt, did you see the Blair Witch Project?
Yeah, I saw it. I saw it a little bit after all the hype. So when I did see it, it was sort of a little bit of a disappointment. And I do agree with you that the camera was just too shaky.
Yeah. I feel drunk.
It was dark. And it just wasn't. When I watched it, I was like, I kind of understand why people liked it because everyone thought it was real.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got that part of it. But the movie itself, I didn't really think it was that great of a movie.
Yeah, I'm with you. Tony, did you see it?
No, I didn't see it when it came out. All the hype and all of that, you know, and horror flicks were never my thing anyway.
Oh, got it. Well, I got to, I went to a Fangoria convention maybe in 2000. In California. It was a really interesting trip to California. This was, again, with my mom. And I saw Dominic Carter out there in L.A. I think he was covering the Democratic convention. I was in Long Beach for the Reform Party convention. And I figured, all right, you know, the Fangoria convention is in Pasadena. Why don't we go? They had interesting people there. They had Linda Blair from The Exorcist. And I think John Landis was there. And they had William Friedkin, who directed The Exorcist and everybody else. And someone asked him a question about the Blair Witch Project, and they were similarly dismissive as we just were. And basically, William Friedkin said he liked it. He really liked the Blair Witch Project. He thought it was really creative and really interesting. It just goes to show you, art is subjective. Different strokes for different folks. 800-848-9222. Jeff is in the Queens. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Frank.
Hi.
Yeah, you know, I have the same feeling about Blair Witch. I was let down by it, but that was, I think it was groundbreaking at the time.
Sure.
With the form. And then, but like with Matt, what Matt said, it was too shaky. Anyway, but you know, just to play devil's advocate, and believe me, well, we know all the horrendous stories of how the music industry ripped off people for decades. The artists got nothing, and you know, the industry is so corrupt. And just, but to play devil's advocate, Frank, wouldn't you agree that in this case, you know, for they got the $300,000. I got the million, and it was a hit. What about the thousands or hundreds, whatever, that aren't, right, don't go anywhere, right? Then in that case, the actor gets, you know, is well compensated.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. There's just something that doesn't seem right about how people are able to use their likeness for video games and all this other stuff, and they don't get any money from that ever.
Oh, of course, you know? No, the likeness thing, right. Of course, that's a whole other thing. By the way, Frank, let me in on the internet thing, mm-hmm. Okay?
Yes.
You know, I also, the past 10 years, I've been judging people who've been looking at their phones as they walk down the street, and you know, passing judgment. And you know, I just did a 180 on that, Frank, because like with yesterday's conversation about religion and feeling belonging, like when the internet now is a place where you can connect with people. Okay, when I was in my 20s, now I'm in my late 60s, I had a list of 10 women, always 10 women, you know, to call up and try to, you know, get close to. Mm-hmm. So I would spend 6 hours on the phone easily at home. Now you don't have to be at home. You can be walking down the street or wherever you're going with the same intention of hooking up. Okay, let's forget the hooking up. Let's say just the computer now, as you said, you took a completely different position. The person who said the internet was boring, you're saying, no, it's the most fascinating thing, if you're a curious person. So, and it can, like with the issue of religion and feeling connected to other human beings, you now can get validation from other human beings who you never would have met, who are interested in the same thing you are, the same video, the same piece of music, etc.
You know, my friend Jeffrey Goldstein, whose bachelor party that I was at last weekend, he met his fiance, as a lot of people do, on the internet. And I think it's, to your point, it's a great way to connect with people. I think the internet is the opposite of boring. Jeff, thanks for the call. 800-848-9222. We'll continue with your call straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight. Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Unchain my heart.
Unchain my heart.
Baby, let me be.
Unchain my heart.
Unchain my heart.
Unchain my heart.
Cause you don't care about me.
Unchain my heart.
You got me sort of like a pillowcase. But you let my love go. So unchain my heart, oh please, please set me free. Unchain my heart,
unchain my heart.
Baby, let me go.
Unchain my heart,
cause you don't love me no more.
Unchain my heart.
Every time I call you on the phone, some fella tells me that you're not at home. So unchain my heart, oh please, please set me free. I'm under your spell.
The great Ray Charles asking for his heart to be unchained. You know what I realize? Almost all of what's in my pockets at any given time is stuff that my son has given me to hold. I'm reaching into my pocket. I was looking to see if I had a facial tissue or something. And I said, I find this long thing. And I think, what is this long thing? But maybe it was the inner tube of a pen or something. I pull it out. It's a chewed up straw from a juice box that my neighbor had given him and which he dropped on the ground. And I didn't want to litter, so I picked it up, and it's been in my pocket ever since. Then right next to it is two pairs of wheels from a car that he broke that he threw on the ground outside yesterday or the day before. He broke them. He broke the car, and then he still wanted to carry around the wheels until he got bored with them. And then he handed me the wheels and says, "Daddy, hold this." And sure enough, I've been holding it for over a day. I guess I could throw it out, but you know, I'm afraid to throw it out because he's one of those guys who he remembers giving you things, and he'll get upset if the wheels are missing. Now, never mind that they're from a broken vehicle, but that's where we are in the pocket world. 800-848-9222. Original Rick is in Original Jersey. Hello.
Good morning, Frank. Good morning. Was you saying emphatically by email for my benefit?
No, I feel...
Oh, because I called it... I don't understand your vitriol hatred for long text messages. I just don't.
It's not what the format is meant for. It's meant for, you know, that's why I always emphasize SMS text messages. It's short message service. It's meant for short messages. It's not meant for lengthy messages.
In the beginning, it was. I agree with you. You had to send a separate 140 text after your 140. It was four or five messages to get the actual message out. But they changed that now. And I just don't understand it. People like you drive me crazy where I'm texting them. And they say, okay, send me an email. And I'll be like, but we're talking right now.
When I get a long text message, I am the only portions of that text message that I look at are the top line and the bottom line. I don't see anything in the middle. I look at the first sentence and the last sentence. That's it.
Why is that?
Because I'm not going to sit there on my phone scrolling through. I'm going to
It's a personal thing. Okay. Then at least I understand, because you can get personal things going on. But in reality, it's not any difference anymore. Except if you're on email, wouldn't it be annoying to you if someone say, okay, text me? You'd say, but I'm on email now.
But
I'm on text, why do I have to now go to my email?
Well, no. So they serve different functions. SMS is great for direct, immediate, time-sensitive information. If I need to know something right away, if, hey, you're off the air, by all means, send a text. But email's great for, you know, a lot of text. It's great for pictures. It's great for attachments. It's great for audio. It's great for sending articles, anything in depth. Emails are great for long, media rich content that you might want to, you know, look at and spend some time with. SMS is great for immediacy, or to say, you know, hey, can I call you in 5 minutes, or, you know, something along those lines, which may not require, you know, which may need a speedier response than email, which could take a few hours.
I don't know. I need to defer to the courts. Matt Blaze, what say the jury on this?
I don't like the pre-call text saying, like, please, like, can you call me on text? I don't get that. Just call.
No. Because
just call. No. But I agree with Frank. I don't like the long text either.
Okay.
Because what ends up happening is I'm talking and talking and talking, and I want you to meet me here at 5 minutes, and then we're going to go to this restaurant, and this is what we're going to do, because you just talked to text an entire paragraph that now I have to read.
Yeah, and that's annoying. Talk to text is just awful. That's just ridiculous. Oh, Rick, thank you. 800-848-9222. Norman in Brooklyn. Hi.
Hey, Frank. Frank, have you ever seen the movie Cannibal Holocaust? It came out in 1980.
No, I have not seen it. I don't think I've heard of it.
Okay, Cannibal Holocaust. It's pretty hard to take, Frank. I mean, it's okay. When I saw it, I saw it like in 1980.
This is not a Joe Biden joke, right?
No, absolutely not, Frank. It's not. This has nothing to do with Uncle Bosie. But it's directed by Ruggero Deodato, who is considered brilliant among the people like Dario Argento, Lucio Fulci, Mario Bava. All these people. These were these Italian. They made a lot of cannibal movies in the 70s and 80s, some cannibal mutilation movies that were quite okay. When I saw Blair Witch Project, I said, man, that is a ripoff of Cannibal Holocaust. And I'm not the only one. Lloyd Kaufman, I'm reading several reviews in my book where they compare it, and it's a ripoff.
Interesting. I'm going to have to check it out again. The name of the film is Cannibal Holocaust.
Right. It came out in 1980 by Diodato.
Thank you, Norman. I appreciate that. Yeah, I didn't know that. All right. Your influence counts. Use it.